And the Fed has said what they said and done what they did, and the stock market is no happier for it. And the dollar is no sadder for it, ultimately, which is an interesting response because, of course, at the time that this was all occurring, the markets seemed to think, oh, good, the Fed is not more hawkish than we feared. Stocks rose, gold rose, dollar fell, and in the last little bit of trade, it all faded back to the starting line. Now, of course, we're going to look at a bit of a digestive period, and it seems like the dollar is getting tossed around a little bit by what could be intervention from Japanese authorities into the yen. But we'll see how all that dust settles going forward. But where we do want to look with a little bit more focus while we have the opportunity is gold, because it has done something here in the past, well, a few months perhaps, that has arguably confounded investors. As ever, this is Macro Money. I'm Ilya Spivak, head of global macro here at Tasty Live. And what we're going to do here is really explore what gold has been doing, because that it seems to have really confounded its own usual price dynamics. The rally that we've seen in particular since March has really decoupled from those things that have historically moved gold and really ought to be moving it if one were to consider the situation logically. And yet something different appears to be going on. So what we're going to do here is unpack a little bit what's been occurring and see if we can't solve this mystery, and then from there try to figure out next steps. So let's begin here with just getting a sense of where gold is and how it got there and what seems to be the driving catalyst. Now, typically gold is one of two things or both, depending on whether those things are working at cross purposes or in parallel. First, it tends to be something that is a kind of foil for interest rates, which is to say, if interest rates look like they're going to go up, gold typically doesn't like that. And if they look like they're going to go down, that's typically a good thing for gold. We can see that in spades in the most recent kind of run-up into Fed policy differences going back before the pandemic. This is of course a monthly chart here. So we can see on it where the Fed rate hike cycle coming out of the global financial crisis seems to peak out. That's right here. And the Fed starts to begin lowering interest rates. This is even before COVID, of course, because at this stage, the Fed had gone through a rapid rate hiking cycle. Not as rapid, of course, as anything that we're seeing with this one, but rapid considering it hadn't raised rates off zero with any kind of significance, basically since the end of the global financial crisis, because inflation had such a hard time coming back and rebuilding. But they started to tighten right around 2016, and interest rates began going up cautiously. They were then accelerated higher because, of course, with the incoming Trump administration in 2017, we had a big rate cut on the tax side of things that juiced up the economy. And then shortly thereafter, there was a trade war with China and a lot of kind of more acrimonious trade relations with other partners. There was talk about maybe escalating tensions with Europe over tariff barriers and a renegotiation, a forceful one of NAFTA. And so there was a period here where rates started going up, and then were quickly aborted because just as the economy got a bit of a sugar high from the tax cut, it then got slammed with the trade war. And as we were going into 2019, growth was already at a six-year low. And so the Fed aborted its hiking cycle, stopped pretty short. It only got rates up to about two and a half percent, and then had to start cutting. And so you see here pointed out this dovish Fed pivot that occurs about mid-2019. And then, of course, there's COVID. And this is where the global economy is essentially shut down. And the Fed says, okay, we're going to give the economy open-ended QE. We're going to cut rates back to zero and open the hose of liquidity and just pour it freely on the markets. Come August and September of that year, the Fed says, you're not getting any more stimulus. This is it. There was speculation around maybe you'll have negative rates in the U.S. Maybe you'll have a forceful cap on yields called yield curve control, as you had in, let's say, Australia or Japan. The Fed says, we're not doing any of that. So as the Fed starts a dovish pivot, rates start to fall, gold rallies, very much in line with its usual relationships. As the Fed signals there is no more dovishness that's coming, gold stops rallying. It then settles into a range while everybody figures out what's going on. And you can see that through the adjustment period in COVID, because the Fed is basically sitting on its hands, there's nothing that's going on with gold. There's nothing to really motivate it. Then you get a bit of geopolitical risk, and that's sort of the other thing that gold tends to be responsive to. There is an almost reflexive buying of gold when guns start going off somewhere. And this seems to be less so a reflection of gold being particularly safe. It's not. There's nothing inherently safe about it. But it does seem to bear this kind of a flight to some degree of geopolitical safety. It's very telling, I think, that it's never a lasting thing. And this was essentially a case in point. You can see there's a spike into the top of the range as Russia invades Ukraine, but it very quickly fades away. Fast forward a little bit later, and there is a spike when Hamas launches its attack on Israel on October the 7th of last year. And that really doesn't find a whole lot of follow through. It is not until March of this year that you really get the pointed punch through this range. If you want to put the range top somewhere around $2,100 an ounce or just under it, not till March do you get that broken. If you want to go back to where the rally ostensibly starts, it's a little bit before all of that. And so you really start to rally around the run-up into the end of the Fed rate hike cycle. So that low that you see there is somewhere around November or so. And so let's call it mid-2022 or so. And this is where things get interesting. This is where you start to ask, well, what's it doing up here? And here's why this is such a confounding thing. So consider first the interest rate story. U.S. economic data has been getting better, or hotter, as it were, since the beginning of the year. And you can see gold's relationship with policy expectations here. So as you get more rate cuts, so too gold starts to edge up. Very familiar, a kind of a relationship. As we just said, gold yields nothing. So when interest rates look like they might be lower, that bolsters its appeal. When the situation is the other way, it tends to go the other way. When you start to have a more hawkish stance in policy, that's typically bad for gold. When you have a more dovish stance, that's good. And you can see that here. But something strange starts to occur in 2024. Is you get a situation here where yields are going up, the stock of rate cuts in expectations is diminishing, but gold is rising, which is a little bit strange. And this is not to say that the markets weren't responsive. If we look at the way stocks have behaved, they're behaving exactly as you might expect. As long as the balance of rate cuts is priced in more dovish than the Fed baseline here, set in December at 3 cuts and reiterated in March. We obviously had a Fed policy announcement today, but they didn't adjust this. This was not the meeting to do that. That happens again in June. But as long as the markets in their expectations for Fed policy were on the dovish side of where the Fed benchmark was, stocks could rally, implying a generally looser perspective on monetary policy. Yet gold does not really reflect this adjustment. What you see in the dollar makes this still more confounding. Because when you look at this now, what you find is that as rate cuts have been coming off the board, the dollar has in fact rallied. And this is the other kind of major catalyst for gold. It tends to move inversely of the US dollar because oftentimes it is a kind of alternative store of value to paper currency. And if you feel like paper currency is going to lose its purchasing power, well, then that ostensibly should be supportive for something that's physical purchasing power like gold. So that the dollar has been rising since the beginning of the year, choppy though its rise has been, is another strange thing. When you look at gold and you think, well, how is it higher here? What's going on? You really get this relationship in spades when you see how gold has behaved relative to real interest rates. So in the blue here, what you have is the TIPS ETF. This is the real rate bonds ETF. It tracks the path of the Treasury inflation adjusted security. So in the blue is the price. So real yields are that line upside down. So when you see the price of the bonds here falling, that's the Fed rate hike cycle. Not surprisingly, starting in early 2022, this is the Fed fighting inflation, raising rates. So you can see real interest rates surge. Gold falls for a bit, anchors, and is now rallying despite this massive adjustment in interest rates. That's weird, one would think, considering the two have tended to move in tandem before that. You can see where you have rallies in bonds, that is a decline in rates, gold is going up. When rates start to rise, gold comes down. And this has been a very clean relationship generally until now. What's interesting as well is that speculative positioning doesn't seem to align with there being a tremendous amount of buying and interest from the investment community. If we look at the net speculative futures market positioning here, in the blue bars is the COT index. This is from the CFTC, the Commodity Futures and Trading Commission. They release once a week the Commitment of Traders report, out of which you can get the spread between speculative longs and non-speculative or hedging longs. So these are accounts that are hedging existing gold exposure. And this gives you a sense of whether speculators are leaning more or less long. And so what you see here is going all the way back to here. So essentially before COVID, you start to see that there's a spike in longs here. We just saw how that happened. The Fed was doing open-ended QE and all these things. And then as you get to a peak in Fed dovishness, the trend in speculative holdings is actually down. There's a bit of a run-up as you get the market start to speculate about the end of the Fed rate hike cycle. But very pointedly, you're in a range here, stuck even as gold rallies. So this increase has not been supported by an increase in speculative buying. That's another interesting disconnect. It is the same story in stocks and their reflection of gold. You can see for the better part of a decade, gold here in the yellow, or in the red rather, has been tracking very closely in lockstep with gold holdings by the GLD ETF, the largest ETF reflection of what the stock market does with gold, until very, very recently, where these things have pointedly decoupled. And the only reasonable explanation that I seem to be finding for why is that at the very same time, there has been a dramatic acceleration in Chinese gold reserves buying. Other major central banks are not doing this, incidentally. The standout is China. And so what this seems to suggest is that for the first time in at least a decade, maybe, gold is not moving as inspired by the dollar. Gold is not moving as inspired by interest rates. It is primarily motivated by a hoovering up of gold reserves by China. Now, this is where the speculative part of the conversation really kicks off. Why is China doing this? One explanation, coupled with the timing at the start of 2022, is that this is occurring because what China is looking to do is to gold back its trade with Russia, since Russia has been effectively locked out due to sanctions out of the dollar-based settlement system for global trade that now it's going to settle its transacting with those countries that still do business with it, notably China. At this point, Russia is the largest supplier of energy to China. It's edged out Saudi Arabia, and it's not surprising because China is willing to buy and Russia needs a buyer desperately and so is willing to sell at discount. So there's one argument to say, well, what China would like to do is gold backstop the trade settlement here so that it can perhaps invite other participants into this clearing system other than just a bilateral relationship between Russia and China, and sort of to cultivate an alternative to the US dollar-based settlement system, SWIFT, the correspondence system based in US dollars between global banks. Now, of course, the volumes here are a trifle compared to what's going on with the US dollar system. To put this in perspective, we have data from the Bank of International Settlements that suggests that daily transactional volume for global currency markets is somewhere on the order of $8-9 trillion a day, and that 88% of that is settled in US dollars because this US dollar settlement system is the primary vehicle. By contrast, the total sum of bilateral trade between Russia and China in 2023 was something like $240 billion for the year. Now, assume that there is a degree of smoke and mirrors here because, of course, there are sanctions and maybe not everything is being counted. So let's say it's double that. Let's say it's half a trillion a year. Half a trillion a year and something on the order of $7 trillion and change in dollars a day does not make this any kind of a competition for the U.S. dollar system. So we can put that aside immediately. But what it does suggest is that maybe there are some initial steps being taken here to backstop that system in a way that isn't reliant on the value of the yuan to retain value. So perhaps if this process is in fact geared towards stabilizing the trade settlement system between Russia and China, and maybe even inviting others into it to increase these volumes and basically say, look, the dynamics here are going to be backstopped with gold. You don't have to believe in the stability or the convertibility of the yuan. You don't have to believe in the stability or the convertibility of the ruble. Here, let's say Brazil or the Euro area or whoever, here is your safety net. The volume here is going to be settled in gold, and so this is liquid and open. So go ahead. You can participate in this. The likelihood is that this accumulation continues. And as of the end of last year, it was happening at a blistering rate of 11% year on year, which is not really matched anywhere else, including in recent Chinese history, going back to, so we can see here, 2014, 2015. There's been kind of one-off buying of gold, but the pace has been very quiet until now. So past year and a half, 2 years. So when you look at it this way, it seems like the move has more legs. China's gold reserves are not at this point in a position to cover all of its bilateral trade with Russia. They're only at about $135 billion here. So to get to 240 at the current pace of 11% year on year, this probably runs until the first quarter of next year. So what that tells us is that, yes, you get episodic pullbacks in gold here. This was the end of the cycle of escalation between Israel and Iran. This was the run up to today's FOMC policy announcement, where the sense was you'd get a higher for longer Fed. So there is a bit of lip service being paid to traditional catalysts, but perhaps any pullbacks here are just opportunities for Chinese authorities to accumulate more. And so there is perhaps a longer arc here for a gold rally and not for any of the reasons that you might usually suspect would catalyze such a thing. And that is macro money for today. Thanks very much for joining as always. We are here on this show Monday through Thursday, right after Overtime, a show that I co-host with Chris Vecchio and Dylan Radigan, looking at the Wall Street close and what might happen thereafter. I'm also on with Chris for Futures Power Hour on Fridays. I'll be on for The Price of Truth later today with Victor Jones. Back on with Victor and Tom for First Call on Sundays, writing for the news and insights portion of tastylive.com and opining on the platform formerly known as Twitter, sporadically, at Ilya Spivak. Thanks very much for joining. Macro Money's back tomorrow. Check out The Price of Truth later today. Take care.
The content of this podcast is created, produced, and provided solely by Tasty Life, Inc. and does not represent the direct views or opinions of any of its affiliated companies. This content is for informational and educational purposes only. It is not, nor is it intended to be trading or investment advice or a recommendation that any security, futures contract, digital asset, other product, transaction, or investment strategy is suitable for any person. Trading securities, futures products, and digital assets involve risk and may result in a loss greater than the original amount invested. Tasty Live Inc., through its content, financial programming, or otherwise, does not provide investment or financial advice or make investment recommendations. The information provided may not be appropriate for all investors and is provided without respect to individual investor financial sophistication, financial situation, investing time horizon, or risk tolerance. Tasty Live Inc. is not a licensed financial advisor, registered investment advisor, registered broker-dealer, or registered introducer.